Cosmos israelí, Tierra Santa, encuentros, valores. Cosmos israelí, creación, tradición, patrimonio, actualidad, comunidades, diálogo, puentes culturales. Cosmos israelí, Tierra Santa, con Ángela María Arbeláez.
Cosmos israelí, hoy desde Masada, donde por estos días se lleva a cabo el Festival de Ópera de Israel, un evento que atrae a decenas de miles de israelíes, turistas y amantes de la ópera a nivel mundial. El quinto Festival de Ópera de Masada es una realidad y es una empresa conjunta de la Ópera de Israel, el Ministerio de Turismo de esta nación y el Consejo Regional de Tamar en el desierto de Masada. El festival de este año lleva a escena la ópera tosca de Giacomo Puccini, dirigida por el director de la Ópera Nacional de París. Nicolás Joel, Maestro Daniel Orel y Carmina Burana de Karl Orff, dirigido por Mijael Stanievski y James Jude. Cosmos israelí y Radio Sefarad visitaron los escenarios naturales donde se lleva a cabo este evento. La puesta en escena de este festival se lleva a cabo en escenarios naturales en los alrededores del Parque Natural de Masada. El teatro al aire libre da cabida a más de 6.000 amantes de la música en un entorno único. Cosmos israelí y Radio Sefarad viajaron hasta Masada para hablar con los protagonistas del Festival de Ópera en este bellísimo lugar. Hannah Munitz, directora de la Ópera de Israel, y Michal Znanietsky compartirán con nuestra audiencia sus impresiones.
Hi. Shalom. I am Hannah Munitz. I'm the director of the Israeli Opera and of this festival. This festival started 5 years ago, 2010. First time we did it with Nabucco. And ever since we did Aida, Carmen, La Traviata, and now two operas for the first time. Well, actually, it's two projects, Tosca and Carmina Burana. And this is what we aim for. To make it a real festival, like more than one project every year, so that people can come to this area, which is a mythical area, historical, beautiful, as you could tell for yourself, a little bit hot in the summer especially, but beautiful, and they can come and see more than one, just one opera at a time, and hopefully in the future we will have be able to do more than that.
What's the proportion?
Thank you. quiera sobre Mijo la Zaninsky, puesta en escena.
Bueno. Mijo Zaninsky, director de Carmina Burana, este año, después La Traviata de año pasado. Estamos de nuevo en Masada y trabajamos en desierto con un tema distinto totalmente, una historia de locura de Carmina Burana, que no es una historia, es una colección de cantos, y mi idea era, la más importante, hacer una dramaturgia que tiene un sentido, que tiene un sentido también en desierto, como siempre, como con La Traviata, hemos buscado cómo encontrar integrarlo. El tema, integrarlo. Por eso acá estamos...
Con Carmina Burana, ¿qué ha sido lo más difícil o lo más interesante?
Bien, la cosa más interesante era contar una historia, porque son cantos totalmente distintos, profanos, y profanos, que no tienen una cosa atada. Por eso hemos hecho este viaje de Indiana Jones, que llega a descubrir un mundo olvidado en desierto, y descubrimos una historia nueva, una historia que a la fin habla de hombre que pasa todas las experiencias de vida, de inocencia, de matar un animal, porque tenemos animales gigantes que vienen, y empieza la taberna, que es un encuentro con siete pecados mortales principales, y a la fin llegamos de nuevo a la muerte. Es la rueda de la suerte, de la fortuna, que está como inicio y el fin de Carmina Burana. Por eso hemos llegado a esto con muchas cosas espectaculares, fuegos como siempre, y después Tosca, que es muy, muy, muy seria y muy austera. Llegamos de nuevo a un espectáculo con bailarines, con acróbatas, y eso no permite el tema y la música.
¿Su nombre de nuevo, por favor?
Mijał Zaniecki, director de Carmina Burana 2015.
Muchísimas gracias.
Y antes de finalizar, recorreremos con Eitan Camp, el director del Parque Nacional de Masada, este impresionante sitio arqueológico y Parque Natural Patrimonio de la Humanidad y la UNESCO.
You see on the top we have a black line. Black line represents what was found in the excavation, what was restored above, to give people a better interpretation, appreciation. So from about that time on, I found my home here at the spot. Anyway, why I stopped here, because it's important to get an idea of the geographical, physical aspect of this mountain. Okay, this is facing north. Came in from the east. Dead Sea is in that direction, but this is a this is an island, geographical island in the middle of the Judean desert, Judean mountains, and it has steep cliffs on all sides. Without any building at all, this is a fortress. There's a story in the Bible that when David ran from Saul, he ran to En Gedi and the fortresses of the desert. Masada, without any building at all, is a natural fortress. And it's important to understand that. Now the cliffs to the east are much steeper. We have the snake path. We'll see that when we continue. And the only way that eventually was accessible to get to the top was the ramp that you can see here on the... on the western slope. But this was the fortification. Three basic periods on top of Masada. One is one who built Masada was Herod. Herod the Great. He took advantage of this mountain. He understood its possibilities. It's a long story and with a couple of chapters, but he situated when he had to escape from the Hashmonean kingdom and he escaped to Masada. He left his family, 800 people on top of the mountain, with his mother and brother, and he went south to Petra, over to Egypt, back to Rome to try and work out a deal, and I eventually become nominated as king of Judea. Come back, join forces, and disperse a siege that had been around the mountain now since he had left. Hardly ever seen any place else. 400,000 cubic feet of water here at Masada at his disposal. This is swimming pools, this is bathhouses, these are royal gardens, this is livestock, this is a live, bustling community here on top of Masada. And just for in case, he would have to need it to get away from his enemies. But we'll talk about that a little more later. The second period, of course, is the Great Revolt. The Jews are fed up with the Roman domination, their restrictions on religion, their intervention, their taxation has all gotten the people above and beyond. They can't take any more, and they think they have can go out and fight, drive the Roman Empire from Judea. Foolish thought, even in this day and age, when you realize what the Roman army entailed. However, this was a revolt that went on for 5-6 years, finished in the year 70, with the destruction of the temple. And in the meantime, for about 7 years, there was a Jewish community on top of the mountain, minding their own business for the most part, out of the way of fire, just using this as a stronghold, a base, so they could run attacks against the Romans and come back. We'll talk more about that also. But, and then the third chapter would be the Byzantine community. The Byzantine monks took over on top of the mountain in the 5th and 6th centuries, and actually they were here for the most amount of time. They were here to close to 150 years, but there were only 20 or 30 of them at a time, and they did very little. They built a church and not much more. So they just wanted to be secluded, wanted to be quiet. They enjoyed the desert silence, and this was a place for them to reconnect to a higher place until the end of the Byzantine Empire, and then they moved on also. Then Masada disappears. We have a story of Josephus Flavius who tells us about Masada, but we really don't know where it is. And only in 1829, two American explorers floating in the Dead Sea stop in En-Gedi, take out a telescope, and see archaeological remains on this plateau. And they begin to think maybe this is the legendary Masada. And the word spreads, and at big spaces of 15, 20 years at a time, explorers try and climb up to the top to look around and put things together according to the story that they have from Josephus. So this is an enchanting mountain. There's a legend. It's already being built about even its whereabouts. It's disappeared. So it becomes very interesting. And then, of course, we have, moves us all the way up to our period. But what I'd like to do, first I'm going to take you to the museum. We're kind of proud of this museum. This was set up very late. It's like the newest addition to the Masada family. Thank you.
Masada es sin lugar a dudas uno de los sitios más visitados en Israel y además es el telón de fondo de Tosca y Carmina Burana. Masada evoca los lugares de la vida de Herodes, los restos del barrio de la época bizantina, así como muchos otros tesoros. Masada está localizada en la región y oasis de Ein Gedi, en el Mar Muerto, y nos despedimos con la invitación de Ofra Gazit, directora del Tamar Regional Council, municipio regional de Tamar. Gracias por escucharnos y hasta nuestra próxima emisión.
My name is Ofra Gazit. I'm working as a marketing manager at the Tamar Regional Council, Detzi, and I'm a member of Kibbutz Ein Gedi, which is the largest kibbutz inside the Detzi. Normally people think that the Detzi is only a touristic place, but actually people live here, children educate here. You get normal life, and part of the thing that visitors likes to have interaction with the residents. So Kibbutz Ein Gedi has also an hotel. This is only one of hotel among 15 hotels that the Dead Sea have. 4,004 rooms at the moment.
How many rooms?
4,004 rooms, 15 hotels, Ken's hotels. And Ein Gedi Kibbutz, it's inside the hotel in Ein Gedi, it's inside a botanical garden. It's actually the only botanical garden that people lives in it. And we are proud in more than 1,001 different kind of subtropical planets. Most of them came from Madagascar, and it's not normal to see it in the middle of a Judean desert. Everything is so dry, everything is so yellow, and sometimes dusty. And Ein Gedi, it's a magic, it's something else. And the kibbutz has a very brand new spa named Synergia Spa. And if you happen to know that spa, actually it comes from the initials of Salute per Agua. And here, one of the research, natural research that we have at the largest natural spa on Earth, which is the Dead Sea, it stands on minus 427 meters below sea level. One of the resorts, actually, the water, three types of water, the sulfur water, the minerals water that you can take in every wadi here in the nature, and the water of the Dead Sea, which contains 21 different kinds of minerals in very high concentration. The second element, it's actually the mud. It's the earth, which is the black mud that you can dig naturally from the sea. And all the cosmetics companies actually based on this research. The third element, it's actually the air, which is richer here compared to other places in Israel or in the world in oxygen, and also in bromine. And that gives the feeling of tranquility. In the area, we say that Tel Aviv, it's a city without a stop, and the Dead Sea, it's a stop without a city. And that's how we want it to be kept. And of course the sun, which is the healthiest sun you ever can get, because it's, we are at the lowest place on earth.
Okay, say me again your name, please.
Ofra Gazit, director, manager, marketing of Tamar Regional Council.
Thank you.